This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penn-Cava. Hatteras Blues is the story of the recreational fishing industry in Hatteras Village, as seen through several generations of the Foster family. It is a story of loss as well as acceptance, and of watching the ways of the past drift away like the sands on a beach. When Tom Carlson set out to write the book about the rise and fall of the commercial fishing industry in Hatteras Village, he thought he was escaping a loss in his own life. But as he became a part of this village and its story, the relationships he developed with the Foster family and the landscape helped him accept his own personal losses. Author Tom Carlson is with us now. Hi there, Tom Carlson. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we welcome your calls this hour. Our number's 1-877-962-9862. Well, the book is Hatteras Blues, a story from the edge of America, out on the Outer Banks, of course. And it's a nonfiction account of the Foster family. And this is the family that, you write, got the charter fishing industry going, the recreational fishing industry going there.
That's right. In 1937, Ernal Foster, who is the father of the gentleman I go fishing with now, Ernie, built a boat for $805 and down in Marshallburg and sailed it up to Hatteras and bet everybody in the village he could make a living taking people out sports fishing instead of trying to do commercial fishing. And he proved he won that bet, and he spawned a multi-million dollar sports fishing industry as a result. And those boats, the three Albatross boats, are still in service.
Some of them date back to the 30s, or have they been new generations along the way?
No, these are the original wood-hulled boats made out of juniper wood, and the original one in 1937 is still in service, and I went out fishing on it about a month ago. It's a beautiful, beautiful boat.
But you write in the book that while those boats may remain and that are, you know, all those decades old, many other things have changed in Hatteras Village in the ensuing years.
Yes. What started out as a chronicle of beginnings of a rags-to-riches story, which is the most American of stories, it became apparent that Ernie Foster's was losing his livelihood to bigger and faster boats owned by corporations as tax write-offs and driven by off-islanders. And it became apparent as the story took on a life of its own, inevitably, that the town was losing its identity to commercial development. Hatteras Village is the last true fishing village in North Carolina. And they're building condos in its midst right now, and it's disappearing along with that thread of community and culture that's been there for hundreds of years. Mm.
Do you see any way for folks who are there to cling to that that long-running tradition, or is change is always inevitable? But I'm just wondering if one can hang on to some facet of that.
Well, it will persist, but the force of American progress is against it. And I did not write this book in an attempt to berate those forces of progress and change. And the reason I didn't is because these people proved to be so strong and accepting of their own fates. There is no bitterness here. There is no anger. These people are amazingly generous of spirit, and that's part of what helped me write this book from my personal point of view. Mm.
But as you found, Ernie Foster, the family business may be ending with him.
Right? That's true, and there's only one other third-generation captain on the Outer Banks in that same village, and when they're gone, even that unique Hoytoider accent that they have out there that's been so wonderfully preserved will disappear also. Mm-hmm. It's a very delicate thread, and they're willing to face the future and change. They see it as inevitable.
Right. We are talking with author Tom Carlson. He has written the book Hatteras Blues, A Story from the Edge of America. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. You spent years teaching in Memphis, and you grew up, as I understand, in New Jersey. So how is it you came to write this book about Hatteras Village?
Well, I grew up on the ocean, and my family had a restaurant right on the beach in New Jersey, and the sea captains, the commercial and sports fishing captains, came in there every day, and in the fall and the spring when it was a little bit slower, I just loved listening to their stories. I was a fisherman myself, and these were my heroes, and quite often they would talk about these magical places like Ocracoke and the Outer Banks and Diamond Shoals and Cape Point, and these were the places that were mythic to me long before I ever went there. And so when I went to the Outer Banks, it was like a homecoming for me. I knew these people, and I knew this ecology. It was very comforting to me. I must say I miss the ocean in Memphis. That's
good
the Mississippi
music, but
River
water,
is not the same.
Speak of, huh?
Lots of blues here, but the other kind.
Yeah, exactly. So when did you first discover Hatteras Village?
Well, I went there with my family in 1985 for a vacation, and I saw those three wood-hulled boats sitting in the marina amongst those other bigger, faster boats, and they reminded me of the boats I grew up with. And it took me 20 years to go back and pursue that image, but if you're a writer, you know to trust your imagination enough. If that image stuck in your mind, it's well worth going back and finding out what the magic of it is, and I did that around 2000.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, Tom Carlson, if you might give us an example of some of what you were writing about in Hatteras Blues, where you describe the landscape there and the inlet.
Well, I'd be happy to. This will be mercifully short, but it may give you a taste of the book. This is coming in aboard the old Albatross boat through Hatteras Inlet, which is very tricky water. Bill is the captain of the boat, Brian is the mate, and Lynn, whom I reference here, is the wife of Ernie Foster. She met him aboard the Albatross and ended up marrying him. So this is just a moment in this amazing, one-of-a-kind landscape, just one moment that of which I had many, many, but this is coming into Hatteras Inlet. We were approaching the mouth of Hatteras Inlet. Tall Bill was calling from the bridge. We looked around. The humpback whales were here again, two of them, very much closer this time. One rolled on its side, and you could see the long, distinguishing pectoral fin, blunt and scalloped, dappled white on its leading edge. Finally, it righted itself, sent its flukes into the bright air, and disappeared. Brian smiled, pleased to see them. I was transfixed once again. Lynn had recently told me about her first encounter with the humpbacks off Hatteras. It was her first trip out on the Albatross, that fateful charter that would lead to her union with the captain. She said Ernie actually pulled in the lines and took us over where he had seen the whales before, and there they were. We were so close to them we could hear them breathing, and we actually got splashed by their spouting. In a place like Hatteras, nature offers a wonderful running conversation in images, not words, but we seldom listen. We're too busy living in it to pay it much mind. But every once in a while, maybe because of our inattention or because we're ready for the conversion experience, nature will raise up a pair of gleaming black flukes into the brilliant, biting air, or send a marlin spiraling into that same air like a muscle-bound parenthesis, just to remind us what we've been missing. It was hard not to believe that there was some kind of divinity glistening in this common miracle I'd just witnessed at the mouth of Hatteras Inlet.
It's Tom Carlson reading from his new book. It's called Hatteras Blues, A Story from the Edge of America. How does this story relate to other places in the country? You say in the title that it's at the edge of America, but do you think this is happening? Some things, the changes are happening elsewhere? Is it a parallel?
Well, if I've done my work correctly, this is a story that anybody can relate to. It's if you don't like fishing, if you've never been to the Outer Banks, I still believe that you can find something very heartwarming in this story. I think it's finally an American story about a family and a town that succeeded through pluck and luck and hard work and shared values that are traceable all the way back to the Mayflower Compact. And then there's the cycle of loss beyond that. This is the story of a small town, And Woodrow Wilson said, the history of America is simply the history of its small towns writ large. And so I do think that the edge of America is not so different from the heartland of America.
Okay. Roger joins us not quite from the edge, but in Elizabeth City. Hi there, Roger.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I just wanted to comment because I'm very interested now that I know the book exists to get it. My wife is from Rodanthe, or Chickamaucomico area, which is just north of where he's talking about and on the same island. And when I met her, the stories that she has about that area are just absolutely amazing. I think that the statement he made about the condos coming in and commercialization, I think that change occurred mainly because of changes that they became connected to the mainland. They were isolated for so long, and you have now television and radio that came in long before that and started to change the accent of the newer generation. And I understand the older generation still maintains that accent, and my wife can do it so well. It's just amazing. They don't move their lips when they talk.
Great. Well, Tom Carlson, you noticed at one point in the book that you didn't always hear the accent except when perhaps when you noticed a conversation perhaps between two older men who may have grown up on the island. When they got together, it would really come out.
That's right. And I think Roger's point's well taken. When the Bonner Bridge connected Hatteras Island to the mainland in 1964, everything changed. And, you know, a lot of these small towns are not incorporated like Hatteras Village, and so they are vulnerable. Their own independence makes them vulnerable to this kind of commercial development.
Is that because are you suggesting it's because if they're not incorporated as towns, there's not any community standard as far as, say, zoning goes? And
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so they have less leverage when these folks come in and start buying up the land that has a smelly fish house on it and want to put up pastel condos. They have less leverage because of that.
Well, you know, that, as you said, it was 4 decades ago the Bonner Bridge came in. Is it just that Hatteras Village is way down at the end of that long island, or barrier strip, that it's feeling the effects last, perhaps, of the Outer Banks?
I think so. Nag's Head and Kitty Hawk and Killdouble Hills, of course, that's all developed up there, and that was closer to the mainland. And so it's just that it's that spread of commercial development that's taken time to get down to Hatteras Village. And it's down there, and it's not going to get any better. So it's, it's partly the distance explains why the commercialization in Hatteras was delayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talk a lot about the geography to track the rise and fall of this fishing community. Had that been your intent when you set out to write about Hatteras Village, Hatteras Blues?
No, I didn't, except it's such a unique and anomalous place out there. There's no ecology like that anywhere on the East or West Coast. And it's... the more I studied the ecology, not the people, the more I realized that the land was a perfect metaphor for the people. That land out there is moving south and west at the rate of anywhere from 5 to 15 feet a year. And so that's all moving. There's nothing permanent out there. Everything is moving. Everything is in flux. And I think at one point in the book I said the inhabitants of the Outer Bank didn't merely adapt to their environment, they became indistinguishable from it. And so the ecology in there is meant to be just one more metaphor for change and movement.
Mm-hmm. You reminded me of something in reading this book about the importation of sand way back as a federal project, and that having an impact of creating the dunes that people today might just say, oh, that was formed naturally there. But you talk about the repercussions of that too.
Well, they've tried for years and years until recently to use what they called hard engineering, that is bulkheads and sand barriers and that sort of thing. And they've just found that exacerbates the problem of the shifting land. And finally, engineering has become enlightened, and they realize the best thing they can do is leave the Outer Banks to its own devices and let it move as it will. If they have to move a lighthouse 1,000 feet inland, as they did with the Cape Hatteras lighthouse, so be it. But they're not going to stop the water from swallowing it where it was.
And how does that? How will that play out then with all the changes that are happening there? You know, the larger homes going up and shifting sands nearby.
Well, Hurricane Isabel in 2003 showed us what the future of that is. If you build on the ocean front, on the Outer Banks, you are going to end up eventually in the water. But that doesn't stop these great McMansions from being built out there and eventually being swallowed in these storms. That's what happened. Hatteras Village lost half its structures.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you write here also about a more personal change and sense of loss in the book. Your wife had been suffering from MS. And,
yes.
And this book was a way for you to deal with that, your research for this and traveling to Hatteras Village.
Well, as always in something like this, you end up learning more than you ever impart to people, even though you may think you're a smarty-pants professor. I ended up learning much more than I ever taught anybody. And one of the things I learned from these people was how to accept change and loss and to grieve with some measure of grace and dignity. I thought I was going there to escape my problems and to divert myself from them, but what happened was that actually taught me utterly and completely how to face my problems and deal with them. So I'm very grateful for those people. They taught me how to do that, and it made my life a lot easier. So I stopped being an objective observer in this book and became a part of it because it was just simply a more honest way of dealing with my relationship to my subject matter.
Okay. Well, and as you wrote in Hatteras Blues, it's not a place for the faint of heart or dry of feet. Tom Carlson, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
Tom Carlson is author of Hatteras Blues. Hatteras Blues, A Story from the Edge of America. And for today, that's the state of things. If you have a comment about our program, you may write to us at sot@wunc.org. Thanks for listening. The State of Things comes from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Melinda Pencava.